at 807 FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on a Tuesday. Phone number, text line 343-0106, 343-0106. Checking in with the author of the Matt Jones Trilogy, the name behind QuinnHillier.com, so you probably guessed it's Quinn Hillier. Hey, Quinn.
Hey, Sean. Are you sure that that's the name behind QuinnHillier.com?
I'm not sure, but I have unnamed sources say that there's a link there. I can't out my sources, but they say there's
some
kind of link.
Unnamed sources are always the ones to go with. That's my motto.
Quinn, did you have to outbid anybody for that site, for that domain name?
Yeah, I had to outbid hordes and hordes of people.
All the other Quinn Hilliers out there. Oh, so much to talk about here. And you had sent a note. We were back and forth talking about what's happening with Syria right now and the U.S. troop withdrawal. I'd like to, you know, add in the extra point that Erdogan meeting with Vladimir Putin today. That's disconcerting. Not surprising, but disconcerting.
Well, look, as I wrote, actually, on behalf of the official editorial board of the Washington Examiner, the day that Trump made the day after Trump made his announcement, the decision and the way that we made it helped Turkey, helped Syria, helped Russia, helped ISIS, helped Iran, and hurt our allies. So that's not a very good decision, but let's set aside whether or not it is somehow the right decision to, you know, to have decided we're going to pull out the troops. The way that we made the decision and acted on it has been the single most incompetent thing I've ever seen in American foreign policy. We were treated to the sight yesterday of Kurds throwing fruit and garbage and rocks at our departing soldiers because they're so upset with us. That doesn't look very good for us. There was a huge article in the, I think it was the Saturday, maybe was it a Friday, Wall Street Journal, about how we left and the chaos where we left so fast that we had to send our own fighter bombers in to blow up our bases so our secrets and our ammo and stuff like that wouldn't get into either Turkish or Russian hands. There was another base where the Russians got there first and they were chortling. They were eating all of our food and looking at all of our equipment. This is not how a great nation acts. If you're going to make the decision, you need to make the decision in a rational, thoughtful, planned way. We had plenty of time. We could have dictated things. We could have said, okay, we are going to leave in 2 months, and but before we do, we're going to accomplish X, Y, and Z. We're going to nail down our bases. We're going to plan how to get our equipment out of there, et cetera. We did none of those things, and that's a huge black eye.
All right, well, let's go back to the first thing, and Lord knows what they were throwing. I mean, the reports have been potatoes, tomatoes, rock. I don't, you know, what they were throwing, but is that enough reason to turn around and put more American lives on the line? Because this, I'm saying this from a perspective, trying to be fair here, of somebody who is, you know, who is soft, has a soft spot in his heart for the Kurds that fought with us. I mean, is that because they were unhappy? Of course they're unhappy. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. Of course they're unhappy.
No, my point there is just the utter humiliation of American forces leaving under such circumstances. It gives us a black eye. I don't know what we should do now, but I will say this. We didn't accomplish anything because not only did we not move troops home, we moved them from Syria to Iraq.
Yep.
And we brought 2,000 more troops over to Saudi Arabia, and now Trump has announced overnight that we're still keeping some forces in Syria, after all, to guard the oil field. So
well,
now,
it wasn't just overnight. Yeah, he said that. But he said that, a presser last week, too. He said that was a maybe, that we would leave some to secure the oil
but,
there.
But if his point is we don't want to have our people over there, well, they were over there in a relatively safe situation where ISIS was controlled the Kurds actually had defenses before we literally made them take down their own defenses. That was 2 months ago. So we're in a relatively stable situation. Now we still have as many troops over there, but we've lost a strategic edge. Our enemies have gained a strategic edge. We still have troops over there, but now they're in Iraq, where they're desperately trying to set up in places that they weren't before. They don't have a strategic advantage. Plus, we sent 2,000 more troops to Saudi Arabia. How is that bringing troops home? How is that accomplishing anything?
Well, don't get me started on sending much to Saudi Arabia, but I want to, the flip side of this, I think, is interesting. It's changed where people, just President Trump supporting or not supporting something changes people's political agenda, or at least what they say in their rhetoric. I mean, you had Democrats forever saying, stop the endless wars, stop involving, and I would agree with that, but I would agree with Rand Paul in the past on that, and what President Trump campaigned on, bringing troops home. But now all of a sudden, you're telling me that the liberal Democrats in Washington are now become the hawks?
They're not really sounding like hawks, but they are saying that the one biggest success for the least amount of spending and the least amount of lives that we have had in the last 60 years is not something we should have abandoned. And especially, and my point is now, even if you buy the argument that we should have decided we're done over there, even if you do that, then if you're the United States, by God, you do it right. By golly. And we did not do it right because, it was sheer utter panic. Nobody knew what was going on. It was sheer incompetence. And the Russians have one of our bases and are laughing at us. And we had to bomb two of our own bases rather than remove our own ammunition, our own equipment, our own strategic plans, et cetera, et cetera. That's sheer incompetence, and we can't have that.
I'm just going back through and seeing how much the Democrats were talking about what a fair trade it was for the amount of troops for what we were securing before President Trump pulled the troops out. I just... You know what I'm saying? I hear you, and I'm trying to challenge my own preconceived notions and just look at how much of this is just straight rhetoric coming out because it's something President Trump did, or how many people. And I think you're a fair, in your opinion, you're a fair arbiter of this. I think you would be the same if it was another president that pulled the troops out. I do think you would say this same thing. But so many voices out there are just saying this because it's something that if President Trump said the sun rises in the east, there would be some kind of house inquiry.
Well, that's what makes me sick, but what also makes me sick is somebody saying, well, because the other side is being hypocrites, therefore we can be hypocrites. And that doesn't work either. Look, on impeachment, if you took all the arguments that the Democrats made in the 90s defending Bill Clinton and just threw them up into the ether now, they would be grabbed and are being grabbed by Republicans now, and vice versa. The Democrats are saying now exactly what Republicans said then, and Republicans are saying now exactly what Democrats mm-hmm. said then, and there may be, half a percent of the population that's saying the same thing now that they said in 1997 and, 98, 99. Why can't people take the party out, take the person out, talk about the facts, the principles, the Constitution, and stay the same?
Yeah, I'm with you, but it just doesn't believe me, I'm on constant hypocrisy watch, and I'll find it on both sides, and I point it out, and I would expect that I would get this, a lot of emails and texts and calls and people saying, yeah, that's right, that is hypocrisy. It's crickets, Quinn. Maybe we're in a phase here in American politics where people don't care.
Well, I would challenge everybody, for the good of the country, for the good of the Constitution, for the good of our system, to stop looking at politics as if it is nothing more than a team sport where you choose Alabama or Auburn. Just because it's your team doesn't mean you root for them. Just because it's the other team doesn't mean you root against them. Instead of choosing a team, choose principles, choose the Constitution, and choose to be guided by facts first. And take the names out of it, take the parties out of it, and judge things according to what is right. Quinn, I wish people would do that.
Quinn, who would you pin the blame on that's where we are now in today's world, that's how politics are ran?
I mean, it's sickening. I got up I was in D.C. for 5 years in the 80s. Then I was in D.C. for 5 years in the 90s. Then I got back up there in 2006 for another 5 years. You see a pattern that I can't bear it any more than 5 years at a time. But when I got up there in 2006, I was amazed because, unlike even in the 90s, nobody talked to each other. I would say to a source, to a high-ranking staffer, or even to a congressman, you know, what are the chances for this bill? And he'd say, I don't think it's going to pass. I said, do you have any, do y'all have any Democratic votes? Oh, I don't know. I said, have you talked to any? He said, why would we talk to the Democrats? And I'm like, because if you want to pass something, you need to get votes. Why not talk to them? And it worked the other way, too. And it's sickening that everything is my team or the other team, rather than, what policy do we want and how do we go about getting it? I'm flabbergasted and I'm sickened by it.
All right. Well, the problem is, though, people say, and I do understand where you come from. I mean, I probably have made the same comments in the past, but people will come to me and say, the Democrats aren't going to play fair. So if you go out and hold out the olive branch here, if you try to be the better person, you're going to lose, and you're going to have no control. You're going to lose.
I'm not saying go and just try to be nice. I'm saying go and try to accomplish something, and you accomplish something by talking to other people. You talk to the other side. You find where there are areas of agreement, and you build on that, and you establish relationships. And you know what? If you're smart, you figure out how to make it in their interest. You know, you get 20, 25 Democrats if you're a Republican, or vice versa, who it will be in their interest to come your way. You don't know where that spot is, where that weak spot is, where that spot of interest is, until you talk to them. And sometimes, they're in a swing district. They're 33 Democrats that got elected last time in districts that were won by President Trump. So they have a political incentive to want to act in the middle. Well, you find a way to do that, and you bring them over to your side, and you pass your policy. That's how you win.
People will say, what would the president think? He had his event the other night in Dallas. He mentioned bringing the troops home, and he had a rousing applause from the audience.
But he didn't bring the troops home. He just moved the troops from Syria to Iraq, and he added 2,000 troops to Saudi Arabia. So we have more troops in the Middle East than we did then, while we lost ground and while our enemies got huge advantages. How does that help any?
There we go. QuinnHillier.com. Yeah, that's the website. And if people want to pick up the Matt Jones trilogy, how do they find it?
Amazon.com.
All right, very good. Quinn and Washington Examiner, just Google that.
Yes, indeed. Quinn Hillier, Washington Examiner. You'll see about 10 or 12 pieces a week.
All right, good stuff, Quinn. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
All right. And on to your phone calls at 343-0106. 343-0106. Coming right back. Right, 826 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. Segment of the show brought to you by my buddy Trey Bennett and 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Yeah, I mean, the name tells you your problem. The solution is they get rid of the junk. You got it. They get rid of it. Could be at your home. Could be at your office. Storage unit. Could be something outside the house. If you got junk, you need it gone, especially looking at the holidays coming up. Maybe you have what used to be in the olden days known as a guest room. And it started slowly by filling things up in the drawers and the dresser in the guest room. Then you piled stuff on top of the dresser and then the floor and then maybe the bed.
That's how it starts.
And then eventually you would have to have like a GPS locator homing device to go in there to be able to figure out where you are with the stuff. Listen, get the junk gone. Open up the guest room in time for the holidays when the family comes in town. Or if you got junk in a storage unit that you can't even identify what's in there, but you're paying on it every month, hey, save that money. Put that back in the budget. Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. They're online. You can do it online, too. Make that appointment, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. And the nice thing is they'll give you an appointment time on a specific day that y'all will agree on. That's when they're there. They quote you a price. If you say yes, they get to work and get it done quickly. Check them out, 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right, from the text line here, and we take some phone calls, Monty says everything has now become dogma, including what Quinn spews. Yeah, how many things are you dogmatic? I think that's getting people to admit that might be tough. Are you dogmatic in your politics? In other words, you got to wait to see who's behind it, mm-hmm. whether you agree with something or disagree with something. It's one of the things that puts me in the... I'm non-dogmatic. That's why I get the emails. Whose side are you on or whatever? I said, I'm a conservative guy, but I look at issues as individual issues and make a decision. That just means that's my opinion. But it's very easy, Monty, you're right, to be dogmatic.
Yeah, I would hope that everyone would aspire to not be dogmatic. But Quinn's right. That's kind of what the political situation is right. Not kind of what it's like. That is what the political situation is right now in Washington. You don't really have very many people stepping out from their party lines unless they are a Democrat in a red state or a Republican in a blue state, then you might see it a little bit, but it's just kind of not how it is nowadays. And I wonder, I asked Quinn who the blame should be pinned on, and I didn't necessarily just mean Democrats or Republicans. I mean, is it the situation with our news that we get mm-hmm. now, whether it's online or on TV, that they kind of force everyone to pick a side, choose a corner, because that's how dramatic TV is made? Or does it really fall on the American people for just being that way in general? And I don't think it's all Americans. I think there's a small and growing smaller percentage of Americans who look at each individual issue and decide which side their morals and ethics would put them on. But it seems like more and more politics are just getting more partisan.
I like when people will say, you know, I agree with the majority, when like somebody's running for office and they'll say, hey, I like that candidate. I agree with the majority of what they say. Or that's, to me, that's a fair assessment. When I get somebody who says, I agree with everything that person does, even decisions they haven't made yet, I go, really? So from Brad, who has called me a disgusting partisan before on the text line, said, Sean, abandoning our allies is not a Republican or a Democrat thing. It's just pure wrong. This texter says, fall of Saigon, much worse prejudice on his part. Keith, who is a vet, said, has Quinn sat down with a career military commander and had a long talk with him or her about how they command with a Dem or Republican commander-in-chief? It's interesting. And this texter says, I love to hate Quinn Hillier. He's so good at what he does sometimes. He just infuriates me when he is right, and I have my mind expanded. Very interesting. We'll get to more of this thought-out texting in a bit. Did he say cement? Kane, cement.
Cement. Not cement.
This morning we talked about details versus details.
Mm-hmm. And I've always been a details guy.
I'll say details, but I say cement, not cement.
Yeah, I do too.
But, just wondered.
You know, earlier I thought it was a garbage truck, but it's a cement truck.
Well, it's a little easier to understand how that dumps over than the garbage truck. All right, it's Mobile Mornings, FM Talk 106.5, phone number 343-0106, 343-0106. We'll get to some of your texts in a second here, but I do want to, before we go any further, let me just interject, God forbid, interject some positive news in the mix, but I'm going to do that because I'm like that.
Please don't.
All right. A story from our news partners at WKRG and WLS out of Chicago, which, by the way, legendary radio station. Nearly 6,000 families on Chicago's South Side no longer have to pay some $5 million in medical debt. The debt was wiped out by a group of local churches working with the New York-based nonprofit RIP Medical Debt, which works to purchase medical debt for pennies on the dollar. Now, this is, I'm pointing the story out because I would like to see this happen elsewhere. Pretty smart idea. They said 5,888 families had their debt erased. They owed an average of over $900. Trinity United Church of Christ was one of the churches that worked on the campaign. They raised $38,000, which was used to help purchase the medical debt. There were celebrations at the church on Sunday after the announcement was made. Some of the families who got debt relief still don't know. They don't know yet that they get. What they're doing, and I looked into this a little bit. I'm going to try and dig deeper during the day today. But this group, and maybe there are others, but this is RIP Medical Debt. They work to purchase medical debt. So this is stuff that's gone into, you know, way late, right? And instead of letting a collection service, a debt collector, purchase the debt, this group acts like the debt collector. And debt collectors obviously are buying debt on a big discount because the amount of it that they can't ever get back or whatever. So this group that is a charity-funded group becomes one of the bidders on that medical debt. And then they, and they go in so they can leverage money because of the big discounts once things are, you know, they think they're uncollectible or very hard to collect. And those debt collectors get them, obviously, to make it worth their time and margin, they get them a big discount. Well, this nonprofit group is raising money and then going in there and bidding on medical debt to buy it for pennies on the dollar and then to eliminate it.
That's some good being done in that neighborhood, in that community.
It should be done everywhere. What a great thing for churches to get involved in. We talk about the, you know, people go round and round with single-payer health care and what should be, you listen to the Democrat debates and all that, and I've pointed out that, you know, look at government's track record of doing these things has been bad. But look at when people of good heart come together in the private sector for a charitable reason and pull their money. This is, somebody was thinking, you know, not only did they have a good heart and wanted to help people, but they thought, okay, this debt is on the marketplace for pennies on the dollar. Can we purchase this? I think it's great. I need to dig into it more, but I'd love to see an idea like this come to churches in our area.
And you said that not all of the families had yet heard the news.
Yeah,
I hope they take a video camera around to these homes, knock on the door, and let them know their medical.
Instead of bringing a big
gone.
Check, by the way, you don't owe a big check,
right? That'd be pretty cool to see those reactions from that.
That's fantastic. So yeah, I wanted to interject that in there. I'm sorry. All right, let's see. This texter says, what's the point of war if there is no end game? Something I've been saying. Listen, this is, I've said it through the whole process. I realized my hypocrisy, and it was because of a place in my heart for the Kurds, because I think they're strong fighters. They're brave as all get out, you know, as a group. I mean, they're named the Peshmerga, which I think translates as those who run to death. I mean,
that's insane.
That's what happens when you're at a crossroads of great armies in, you know, in that they've been fighting it. They fought Genghis Khan, you know, as did other tribal people in that region. And now they're fighting the Turks and the Russians. And okay, so, but I have been, and want to be consistent, I am about bringing troops home if there's no end game, like that texter said. How many times do I, you know, probably 8 to 9 out of 10 times agree with what Rand Paul says. I'll just bring it up because people make fun of me for it, but I do. I like the fact that Rand Paul is either the president's best friend, like he is right now on this thing, or the president's worst enemy. But Rand Paul's was the same way when Obama was in office, same way when Bush was in. Okay.
And there's he's about the only one that takes different sides.
He takes his own, he's consistent. Yeah. He's a Republican, he's conservative, but he's a constitutionalist. Philip, our buddy Philip, said if Trump cured cancer, Quinn would blame him for putting the doctors out of business. Okay. Dan says, yeah, Quinn Hill, your story's interesting and all, but I'm still stuck on that $210 bottle of beer. Like, what in the actual hops? This makes no sense to me. For about $50 and 2 or 3 nights in a tent, you can get a bottle of that Pappy 23. That's right. You can camp out like you're waiting for, what is the, what's the book? The book series, J.K. Rowling?
Harry Potter. Lots of people waited for those.
All right. Terry says, at first I was dismayed I thought that was the beginning of a song. First, I was dismayed at the pullout from Syria. Thank you. Pullout from Syria, but I didn't think we belonged there to begin with. But after doing more digging, I found out most of the groups in the area we are leaving may not be much better than ISIS. Beyond the headlines and 30-second blurbs, people. So look beyond the headlines and the 30-second blurbs.
And that's, you know, one thing, and it's why it's so hard to figure out which side is the right side. And I don't mean Democrat and Republican, but just when you get news articles out, and we got them for years, and we saw videos and documentaries of the Kurdish fighters, you know, they had the female warriors, and we've discussed in the past, women and children, and hopefully not too young of children, but they have to become warriors when they believe that their home.
Yeah, I mean, when your home's the battlefield.
Yeah,
I mean,
when your home is the battlefield, you don't have much other options. But we saw for years and years and years that these Kurds were fighting with Americans and on the right side of this battle, and so brave and courageous. And then after this move was made, start seeing all these news stories come out that, well, they're not actually all that good, and they've done this and that to Christians. And so many different news articles come out about any new topic that pops up that it's increasingly more difficult to figure out who and what is the truth.
Yeah, that is fair. And we pointed out some things that are factual, though. The Kurds are not a nationality. They don't have a country. So there are Kurds in Iran. There are Kurds in Syria. There are Kurds in Turkey. You know, there are Kurds in Iraq, obviously. So they're an ethnic group that doesn't have their own country. Would point out, as I continue, what I hadn't changed. I've been pretty on this for at least a decade, that I don't like Turkey being a member of NATO. Erdogan is sitting down with Vladimir Putin today. Just want to point that out. Just I'm writing that on my list. Just want to point that out going forward. 8:46, we'll be right back. Right, 850 FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings. Don't know if there's any other discussions happened with Senator Mitt Romney and Pierre Delecto. It's my favorite story of the day yesterday, the fact that Mitt Romney, of all people, the extra heavy starch shirt that he is, had a has a secret, it's now gone private, secret Twitter account. I was wondering yesterday, you know, the other person that would surprise me even more than Mitt Romney would be Governor Kay Ivey. Kind of riffing on that yesterday, what her secret Twitter account would be called, what the handle would be for it,
and who would she follow. That would be so interesting. You know, I was kind of out of pocket a little bit. So Romney got caught, like, was an investigative,
he caught himself,
reporter.
Oh, listen, so he gives this interview, and he wanted to be, he dropped every clue possible so they could then. In this interview, he's talked about, well, this secret account has 688 followers, or I follow, you know, and this, and he gave enough information that the person over at Slate.com over the weekend, just people were like, oh, it was a major in-depth dive into the, you know, into the data mine. No, they just kind of trolled through and looked at, you know, I mean, because he followed all, like, his children on Twitter and all this. I mean, come on. So, yeah, Pierre Delecto, Ben Romney. I just, yeah, still wondering. There's a lot of great suggestions that come through the Twitter feed and the text line, but still taking your suggestions on what. Now, remember, somebody had said, given a lot of them that had, like, Governor Meemaw and stuff like that, it would have to be secret. What would Governor Kay Ivey, if she had a secret Twitter account, what would the handle be that she thinks she'd be fooling everybody?
Yeah, maybe congealed tuna. Remember, that was her favorite childhood
suggestion. Yes.
Oh, that somebody got that before me. Man, there's plenty of good ones out there, but you can't just say Governor Turkey or whatever it was you just said, because that'd be way too obvious.
Looking through some text here, unnamed texter. Y'all give me your name, or give yourself a nickname or a first name or something like that. I like to refer to you by name. It says, during the last administration, the Republicans wanted to arm just about everything could tote, I guess, tote. Voice to text, by the way, has been a challenge in this business, okay? imagine tote. About everything that could tote a gun. Called Obama weak for committing troops. What is the reason for the change of heart? Would say, in my opinion, I don't know about those folks, but for me, what I really did not like is President Obama at that point talk about the line, do not cross, here's the red line, and then setting himself up for failure, you know, and not living up to that. Don't, you know, you speak loudly and carry a small stick. No, that's the reverse.
Right.
I like policy the other way. So it's, listen, the change of heart, remember, for this texter, unnamed texter, remember President Trump campaigned on bringing troops home.
Mm-hmm.
This was forgotten in a lot of the other things that went on, but he absolutely campaigned because it stood out to me. It stood out to me. I said, wow, the neocons are not going to like this, and they didn't. That's why I had the conniption fit I did when he brought John Bolton in. Y'all remember me just, you know, and all the Bolton lovers were all over my case, but I said, this makes no sense. You have a president who campaigned on bringing troops home, getting out of these entanglements, and now he brings John Bolton in, which is contrary.
Yeah, because Bolton is hawk number one.
Yes, he is. He is the big hawk. And so when Bolton left, you saw things change in here somewhat, and I said, okay, now he's kind of maybe getting back to what he talked about on the campaign trail.
Well, with Trump saying he was taking the troops out of Syria there, and it seemed like they were coming home, and then these most recent actions by putting some of the troops out in Iraq and then sending 2,000 over to Saudi Arabia, he said that Saudi Arabia was paying for that deployment. Mm-hmm. But do you think that he made those moves because of the reaction of the American people, or do you think it's just kind of there's no real in-depth strategy in this particular situation?
Well, it may be shifting assets to other places, but I mean, the Saudi thing, I'm going to tell you, I'm real biased on. As y'all know, I grudgingly understand the realpolitik and the reason for our alliance with Saudi Arabia. I don't like it. I don't like, you know, if there was a better option somewhere right in that same theater, I'd be voting every day to, hey, let's go with those people. But there's not. So I get it is a grudging situation, but if you bring troops in, you can argue it this way, that, you know, this economy runs on oil. And if you use U.S., and I mean, look, we're leaving troops to defend, you know, oil facilities that in the area of northern Syria, northeast Syria, okay? That's because of oil. I mean, that's because of the value to our economy in oil. It's a weird thing. Will they be their own little city-states surrounding these oil facilities? Will we airdrop stuff in there? Will we be able to move convoys in to resupply our troops? I mean, these things are, I think, fair questions to ask. How long will they remain at these facilities? Sure, the way to, and not that this is dishonest, but there's a political motive to it, that we've got to secure these things so ISIS doesn't, you know, you don't have a resurgent ISIS, and they get control of them, and they use that to fund further activities. But it's also because we want to keep the flow of that oil coming.
Right.
Same reason you would put troops in Saudi Arabia. You know, same reason we involve ourselves in anything around the Persian Gulf. So is it maybe moving from a deployment that was based on, I don't know if it's nation building or nation steering, into one that's absolutely an economic reason to place our troops one place and another.
And that oil, more than likely the same reason that Putin is in the area.
Sure.
And it's why he's backing those Syrian forces who just signed or who just made a deal with those Kurdish forces. But now Putin meeting with the Turkey President Erdogan this morning. So he's playing both sides right now,
sure,
or at least it appears that way. And he, you know, he's looking at that oil right there and the territory that's controlled.
Bet your stash of polonium that Vladimir Putin is no dummy. Okay, just go ahead and mark that one down as a thing. All right, we're doing it all again today at noon for Midday Mobile. Remember, podcast of this show and the other 45 hours a week of live local programming. Those podcasts waiting for you. You can go to the website, fmtalk1065.com. Click the link for podcast. You can also go to, we'd love you to subscribe to iTunes, or if you're a Android user like me, Stitcher, like someone who stitches, Stitcher is a great app there. Plus, our podcast available at TuneIn Radio, Spotify.
Mm-hmm. Stitcher.
And quality grocery stores near you.
Yeah. And all go right. Play outside.
Yeah, that's right.
The giveaway.